Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann Show. Please be sure to tune in Sunday nights from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, to discuss current events, news, and political opinion with Lucid Libertarian flair. Be prepared, folks. We often go into an optional extended third hour. This show advocates for liberty, freedom, our Constitution, Bill of Rights, and limited government, while speaking against corporate and government corruption, tyranny, and the globalist Great Reset agenda that undermines our precious American sovereignty. Discussions here are unscripted and free-flowing, so sometimes conversations wander off in unpredictable directions. Would you like to call in and share your thoughts and be part of the conversation? The number is 563-999-3698. Again, that is 563-999-3698. Then press number 1 and you'll be added to the queue. Please also like and follow my Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann page on Facebook. You can help me battle their freedom-loathing censorship by visiting my page regularly, along with reacting, commenting, and sharing my posts. Thank you so much for listening, but please sit tight and don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a few minutes to kick off the show.
Hey, yeah, it's me, 2022 Oregon gubernatorial candidate Leon Noble. You know what really grinds my gears? I was excluded from a debate on July 29th because I didn't spend millions of dollars in advertising to win my primary election in Oregon. No, we got it in writing. No pay, no play. The time for playing nice is over. Now it's fire for effect. So even though you owe me nothing, I want you to do me a favor. Jump online, point your browser of choice to setoregonfree.com, click that donate button, and donate to Set Oregon Free, so that our Oregon candidates will have their message heard by the public of Oregon, even if you don't like what we have to say. I'm not asking for your vote, I'm asking for your help. Lend me your voice, and together we will set Oregon free. Paid for by Set Oregon Free, 22239.
Imagine waking up in a trunk. What is grooming? What if I told you we had a 40% increase of human and sex trafficking in our country due to COVID lockdowns? We already had high numbers to begin with. One's Purpose is an amazing organization pounding the pavement every day helping these survivors get help. Unfortunately, they do not have the funding they need for a safe house. In the state of Oregon, we have zero safe houses for these survivors who have endured the most heinous of crimes. The time is now to get involved. The time is now to help stop human trafficking. Please go to onespurpose.com to get involved. If you need help and if you know someone who needs to get help, please contact 541-221-3448. Make a donation. Make a difference.
To all I am and feel and love.
There will always be wars and rumors of wars as long as time lasts, and we'll always fight to protect our families and our home and our homeland. It's all for God and country, no matter what country we find ourselves in. We are all God's children. And God, again, we ask your blessings upon our troops and upon America, and we pray for peace on earth and goodwill toward men. And we ask that you deliver us from evil in whatever form it might take.
Well, hello, all of you liberty and freedom lovers out there. You are tuned in to the Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann Show. Thank you so much for finding me on this Sunday, September 11th, 2022. It is the 21st anniversary of that horrible day, 9/11/2001. 21 years already. Wow. And there's still so many questions. The impact of that day and what has transpired ever since then over the last 21 years. We are just out there for the truth. We still don't have the truth. And a lot of us out there, myself included, believe that 9/11 was the excuse used to catapult the New World Order agenda, which includes increased surveillance, including on our own American citizens, our fellow citizens, increased surveillance of everything, communications, financial. It ushered in the founding of Homeland Security, kind of like the bureaucracy to head up all the other bureaucracies. And then all of the wars, the use of 9/11 to usher in the United States regime change in the Middle East, to go to war in Afghanistan, to go to war in Iraq, to bomb Syria time and time again. That whole plan surfaced literally like the day after 9/11. And they don't make those plans out of nowhere. You know, that's when it started to become known, but it takes longer than that to plan that kind of stuff. So you know that stuff was in the works. So tonight we're definitely going to be talking a lot of 9/11 truth and everything surrounding 9/11 truth and what it has ushered in and how everything that it ushered in with increased surveillance, with bigger and bigger government bureaucracies, more monitoring of U.S. citizens, and all of that. How did all of this bring about the COVID response? I think 9/11 really gave them a taste. Our own government and the cabal, the New World Order agenda cabal, the big power players of the world, it really ushered in this knowledge of just how much we the people can be fooled, just how much the media can be used to spread the desired propaganda. And of course, I have more than enough clips to play. I mean, I don't want to use the whole show to play nothing but clips. But some of the clips are, you know, very compelling and can start discussion. So, you know, there's so much to hit up on. As a matter of fact, going on right now, which I've been watching, not Richard Gage, AIA. He is a two-time guest on my show here. in the past, Richard Gage is the founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. So he has been a 9/11 Truth advocate for a long time. And over the last year, he stepped down from AE 9/11 and went on his own. And so now he is unleashed. And he's been doing today a film festival. And it's live streaming right now. It's been going on pretty much all day since 10 a.m. this morning, Pacific time. And it's all live streamed, so it's all going to be available after the live stream ends, so I can pick up on the stuff that I missed. He had James Corbett on to talk for a little bit and debuting his third installment of, what is it again? I was just watching it before. His third installment of False Flag, Secret History of Al-Qaeda. And if you all know James Corbett, like, he is the master of truth research. Everything he does is very well researched. He has a very much a knack and a gift for presenting a lot of material. So he was a guest. He was on during this to premiere his part three installment. So you can still find this on richardgage911.org. And it outlines the films that they played, and they're doing a couple interviews. And all of this will be available in an archive. The live feed is on YouTube, so it should be available there. And but of course you'll be able to find it on his website, richardgage911.org. So I encourage you to do that, of course, after the show, after my show. And it's really been a lot of this stuff I already knew or had already seen. But, of course, there's always new stuff that's presented, stuff that I haven't seen or heard about. And but it's also a great, you know, refresher of my memory and reminder of, oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, that's right. So there's no way I can talk and describe all of the information that has been presented all day in this one thing. So I encourage you to look that up on richardgage911.org, the 9/11 Film Festival. And once it's archived and ready to go, I'm sure it'll be ready, you know, late tonight, maybe, you know, early tomorrow morning. And so you can peruse it. But, yes, it's several hours long. So just, you know, be ready to kick back and watch it, or just watch it in parts. You know I missed, like, the first hour or so, and then, of course, now I'm going to be missing the last hour, hour and a half, depending on, you know, the last segment of this is going to be like a question and answer type of thing, so who knows how long that'll go on for. So they've been at it for a long time. So I got to give kudos to Richard Gage and his wife, Gail, who is his executive producer, his right hand, his person that does a lot of posts and promotion. Gail is a really sweet lady. And so I got to hand it to them both because, I mean, me just doing a three-hour show can be exhausting as it is. And so for them to be going on from 10 o'clock this morning, making it a full day with very little break. The only break they get is during the films, I'm sure. Yeah, like kudos to them for making an entire day out of this and letting us not forget that day and letting us not forget all of the lies that we're still expected to believe. And so, of course, I have some clips and whatnot later reiterate this, especially until people call in and things like that. But, you know, it's like some of the things that when you're looking up 9/11 truth, like especially if you've never really looked into it, well, first off, you got to look into World Trade Center 7. Because believe it or not, you know, some of you, most of my listeners should probably already know this, but if you don't, a third building went down that day, but you never hear about it. And that's deliberate. The media does not want you, our government and media, nobody wants you looking into World Trade Center 7. Because that building went down. It was not hit by a plane. There's no jet fuel excuse. And it went down hours after the towers went down. It sustained only minimal damage from the fallout of the Twin Towers coming down. And it had to have been planned because over 20 minutes before the building went down, the BBC, a BBC reporter, was reporting on it with the World Trade Center 7 building right there behind her, saying that it had collapsed. So the media jumped the gun a little bit, got their timing wrong. Apparently, I guess, the CNN reported it too soon as well. I haven't actually seen that, but I did hear it throughout the course of what I've been watching today. That came out as well, so I'm going to have to look that up. So World Trade Center 7 is really the smoking gun of 9/11. It's very hard to believe the official story of what happened after you look into World Trade Center 7. And they're trying to say that World Trade Center 7, you know, the NIST report says that it went down due to office fires. Now, those office fires, they were not fueled, like I said, by jet fuel. And even still, jet fuel combined with, you know, vests and carpet and walls and all that can't nearly get to the temperatures needed to melt steel beams. Can't even come close to that. So that doesn't work either. But since there was no plane that hit it, and so no jet fuel, regular office fires, and it was only, I believe, on two floors of the building that had office fires. And as office fires usually do, you know, it doesn't have, it goes from room to room to room. It burns up what there is to burn, runs out of stuff to burn, and moves on. And so the fires weren't sustained for several hours because it moved from air at one area to the next as it consumed what it could consume and then moved on. So the office fires explanation that NIST put out, our government put out, doesn't add up. And so you really got to start looking at that. And the media cover-up of it, like even still, with the lights of New York, when they're honoring or remembering 9/11, they light up those only two large lights that go way up into the sky as a memorial. So they only honor the two buildings that fell. They don't have a light for World Trade Center 7. Why is that? Shouldn't that have lights too? A third building went down. That was part of that day. And then, so once you start to look at World Trade Center 7, then you can't help but start to question the first two trade centers and the Pentagon and the Pennsylvania flight. You have to question all of it. And as a matter of fact, one of the clips I want to play includes an interview with Larry Silverstein, who coincidentally enough, July of 2001, nearly 3 months before 9/11, Larry Silverstein managed to get himself like a 100-year lease, basically ownership of the World Trade Center towers. the 3 months before. Prior to that, it was owned by the New York Port Authority. And then he also took out some very large insurance policies. And those insurance policies were for about $3.5 billion each. And so when after the towers fell, then he started battling for a while because the insurance company wanted to include it as one separate incident. So a payout of $3.5 billion for both buildings, counting it as one incident. But he was able to successfully get the insurance companies to count it as two separate incidences and therefore get paid over $7 billion. Now, granted, the money that he used to essentially buy those leases were all borrowed money. And so he got a heck of a deal on that. You know, what a payout, right? How lucky for him to essentially have his full bill paid by the insurance company. And, of course, they rebuilt that, you know, they rebuilt the, you know, the area and everything. But he wasn't alone in that effort, of course. And there's money involved and investment involved, but, you know, the rebuilding of it definitely made him and a lot of his friends a lot of money there, too. So, I mean, you can't deny that either. So it was a very convenient thing that happened. And then you can't dismiss the stock put options. The stock put options, basically betting that stocks will go down, spiked like over 1,000% for both American Airlines and United Airlines, the planes that were used, right? And so that in and of that right there points to foreknowledge. Why would, in the weeks before 9/11 happened, why would all of a sudden, unexplainable, a whole bunch of investors decide to bet against the stocks of those two airlines going, you know, up? Like they knew, you know, they're betting that the stocks are the stock prices are going to fall. And of course they won that bet. And so there were some psychic investors apparently that made a bunch of money off of the fact that the stock for those two airlines plummeted. That's got to indicate something suspicious there. And yet it's never really been investigated. The people doing those put options weren't investigated. Gee, I wonder why. You know, I wonder who those people were. And why were they protected from being investigated? So there's that question. Cannot be, you know, it's a rabbit hole to go down with all these questions. Then you have the famous, you know, the five men that were in vans that were taking pictures of each other and celebrating the collapses of the towers. They're like, yay, hurrah, hurrah. And it was a woman witness that saw them doing this. And so she called them in, you know, called the police to report them. And it turns out that all five of these men were connected to the Israeli Mossad. They were all Israelis and connected to the Mossad. And for those of you that don't know, the Mossad is one of the Israeli intelligence agencies, kind of like the equivalent of our CIA. So how, you know,
then there was also a lot of Israelis that it turns out they were forewarned. Don't go into New York that day. Don't go into work that day. Don't go anywhere near the towers that day. They were warned, and didn't, so therefore they did not show up. So, I mean, there was, like, several worldwide intelligence agencies that had issued warnings about an imminent attack. You know, there was definitely foreknowledge of it. And then it wasn't too long, if you all remember, President Bush at the time, Bush Jr., and several others were trying to tout the line that this was a failure of imagination. Nobody could have imagined hijackers using a plane to, you know, hijack planes and use them basically as a bomb to ram into buildings, like, of course, World Trade Center buildings. World Trade Center buildings are a huge target, always have been. And then, of course, that turned out to be lie after lie. How, you know, they were playing dumb, and they weren't doing a very good job of it. So, I mean, they had drills even that same day. They were having drills. And so I guess that was part of the confusion. Some of the people in the military didn't know if their reports were real or if they were part of the drill. So isn't that convenient? Who would know that they're going to be having all these military drills? You know, how could these 19 supposed terrorists that hijacked the planes and whoever it is they were answering to, Bin Laden, was it really Bin Laden they were answering to? I don't know, you know. Or was Bin Laden answering to somebody else? Because it sure seemed like, you know, some people in the middle of Afghanistan or Pakistan, how would they know that there's going to coincidentally be these drills for these very same things going on that very same day in order to plan it and when they did? Was it just a happy coincidence? You know, I don't think so. The more you look into it, all these happy coincidences just don't add up. So, yeah, there's, you know, there's so much to it that I know I can't come close to even explaining all of it. And so I'm going to get ready to play one of the clips. Of course, I have some longer ones, and of course, I have some shorter ones. but the one that I wanted to play is the one that includes I have some Corbett Report ones that he's always really good. And I'm trying to find, where is the one that, okay, yeah, 9/11 Conspiracy Theories and Unanswered Questions. And this includes the Silverstein interview. And he's talking about World Trade Center 7. And he admits, he literally admits, that the decision was made to pull World Trade Center 7. And by pull, meaning controlled demolition. And, of course, the government tries to hide that, and you'll hardly ever see that. That was completely ignored by the NIST report. And let's forget that he actually admitted that the decision was made to pull it. No, it was just office fires that brought it down, guys. Trust now. Clip is about 19 minutes long, but it does a good job of outlining the conspiracy theories and unanswered questions, right? The person doing it is just presenting the information. Decide for yourself. But this one, this was posted on YouTube September 16th of 2016. So about 5 years ago, right? 6 years ago. 6 years ago. Sorry. Math in my head. So I'm going to go ahead and play this. And while this is playing, if you want to call in, please do so. 563-999-3698. And then press number 1. And that raises your hand on the switchboard, lets me know you want to talk. If you don't press number 1, then I'm going to assume that you're calling in and just hanging out listening. So pressing that number 1 is what tells me you want to talk, and then I will be happy to bring you on. So with that, I'm going to kick off this clip, Conspiracy Theories and Unanswered Questions. 3, 2, 1, and launch.
Immediately after the devastating and world-changing day that was September the 11th, 2001, the thought that the US government could be behind it was the last thing on people's minds. But as time went on, more and more questions were going unanswered, and before long, 1 in 7 Americans started believing the US government had some involvement in the 9/11 attack. The trouble is, what and who can we believe? It's very easy to say one thing and make it sound believable. And although a lot of what the 9/11 truth seekers say is proof of an inside job, many say it isn't and cannot be used as evidence of the US's involvement. But there are, however, a few things that even those who believe the official story, that 19 devout Al-Qaeda terrorists were responsible, will say, okay, that doesn't really make sense. Now, before I begin, I want to say I am in no way supporting any of these claims whatsoever, or saying the government had any involvement. I will simply be giving forth the information that is out there, and the thoughts that the attack may have been a cover-up or could have been prevented. Again, I am not agreeing with what is being said, I am simply giving you the information so you can make up your own mind, and will be comparing the conspiracy theories with the official story in the 9/11 Commission report. Bear in mind that many people stick to a conclusion, and regardless of how much evidence there is suggesting it wasn't an inside job, people can always cling on to something to say proves it was, and vice versa. So keep this into consideration, and explore both sides thoroughly before making a decision, especially before preaching your decision on others. The biggest question surrounding that day is who was responsible for the attacks, and was it really the 19 Al-Qaeda terrorists that the media portrayed after 9/11? Let's look at some of the theories surrounding the thought that the people that were said to be responsible were not. For starters, 4 passports were found in total belonging to the supposed terrorists involved. 2 were found at the Pennsylvania crash site of Flight 93. 1 was found in the luggage of a terrorist that did not make it onto the plane and was stuck on a conveyor belt in the airport. And 1 was handed to an FBI agent shortly after the first plane hit the North Tower that was found on the ground completely undamaged not far from the World Trade Center. This is the one the skeptics point to, saying it seems hard to believe a paper passport could survive such a crash when 2 110-story steel-frame buildings couldn't. Although this cannot be used as evidence of a cover-up, as it's not totally impossible for it to have been blown out of the plane as it hit the towers, it has, however, raised some serious questions that haven't been answered. But why would a passport be planted there? The theory is that the terrorists were framed and were hired and set up by the US government and are still alive. This was strengthened when Mohammed Atta's father said he spoke to his son the day after the attack and said he was fine. It sounds insane, but his father was also interviewed and stated his son's passport was stolen and he is either hiding or being kidnapped by the FBI. He goes on to say his son hated Osama bin Laden and would never take part in the terrorist act. A man who also knew him and lived next to his family's home in Egypt said he did not believe Atta was responsible. Either they're in complete denial or they are both telling the truth. As a matter of fact, every single person who is thought to have been responsible have apparently come forward to say they were framed. Although, since we have no interviews or official statements of this, we can only speculate. Another thing people say raises suspicion is that despite questioning, it doesn't seem any information has been released, such as the section of their boarding pass that would have been torn off at the airport, or credible CCTV footage supporting the theory that the hijackers didn't even board the planes. Now you could say, why should the FBI release this information, and they probably shouldn't, but when there's such a huge amount of doubt about 9/11, you would think they would to prove people wrong. Yet despite many asking for evidence, nothing credible has been given. Does this prove the terrorists were framed and are hiding or being kidnapped? Absolutely not, but it's things like this the skeptics point to when saying we haven't been told the full story. Then there are the planes. It's said that during the hijacking of all the flights, passengers on board rang family members to tell them what was happening. Scientists maintain that mobile phones would not have been possible at the altitude the planes were flying at. Others argue, however, that not all the calls were from cell phones, but also from the phones in the back of the plane's seats, and that cell phones can work whilst on an aeroplane at low altitude, which is when the calls were made. Because of this, the theory that the calls were not actually made or were made with voice morphing technology has been dismissed by most. Add the fact that a large amount of passengers on board the flights made last-minute plans to get on those planes, and also Linda Granlund, who rang her young sister from Flight 93 to tell her she loved her and gave her the combination to her safe that only she would know, and the voice morphing conspiracy has very little credible information to back it. But what about the plane's black boxes, which are electronic recording devices with the sole purpose of helping gather information in the event of an aviation disaster? The black boxes from the plane that hit the Pentagon and the plane that crashed in Pennsylvania were recovered, but they were so badly damaged that not all the information could be retrieved. The planes that hit the World Trade Center, however, were never found. But two firefighters say that three of four boxes were recovered at Ground Zero, and FBI agents took them away and told them not to mention anything. But how could a passport survive the initial impact, which we can assume was on the person at the front of the plane, yet the black boxes, which are situated at the back of the plane and are designed to withstand a crash, could not? Before I talk about the collapse of the two World Trade Centers and Building 7, which both make up the bulk of skeptics' arguments, I want to discuss some of the conspiracies surrounding the Pentagon. When you consider the devastation a commercial aircraft caused to the World Trade Centers, by comparison, the Pentagon crash did not appear to have caused so much damage, which has raised questions. Pictures that emerged from the crash show much smaller impact holes on the building than you would expect from a plane with a width of around 125 feet. But it has been said that the plane crashed into a part of the building that had recently been renovated and was incredibly reinforced. But why has only one video of the Pentagon being hit been released? It said it was caught on 82 different cameras, yet these have never been released to prove the skeptics wrong and take the doubt out of people's minds. Add the fact that no bodies, seat wreckage, or luggage was apparently found has also fueled the skeptics. They say apart from a few pieces of aeroplane, they see no solid proof that Flight 77 crashed into the Pentagon. April Gallup, a Pentagon worker, also backs these claims, saying whatever hit the building she was in did not look like a plane. But what about all the witnesses who did see the plane crash?
These conspiracy theories about, I don't know, the Navy sent missiles, and I mean, first they don't make logical sense, like where did the plane go after that, and why are those people dead? But I saw it, that there's just no question at all that the plane went into the Pentagon wall.
What I saw was a jumbo jet hit the Pentagon. The end.
You know, bottom line is, I saw the plane hit. It hit the building.
The conspiracy theorists believe if the plane was traveling at 530 miles per hour, which is stated in the 9/11 Commission report, it would have been a blur and no one would have had a chance to even see the plane. So if it wasn't a plane like some suggest, then what was it? The most believed alternate theory is that it was a missile and Flight 77 was taken elsewhere to be taken care of. This thought has angered the family of the passengers on board the flight, but many do continue to believe this is what happened. When the two World Trade Center buildings collapsed, the world was in complete shock. Two 110-story buildings came crashing vertically down in what seemed like a controlled manner. This led to people saying the towers fell due to a demolition and not as a result of the plane crash and subsequent fire that melted and weakened the steel beams. After all, there's only been three high-rise buildings that have ever collapsed due to fire like on 9/11, and that is World Trade Center 1, 2, and 7 on September the 11th, 2001. The scientific evidence suggests that aviation fuel and office furniture simply could not produce the sort of heat needed to melt the steel frames of the towers, and especially not give off enough heat for the fire at Ground Zero to burn for nearly 4 months, being completely soaked in water. So what do the conspiracy theorists believe? They believe the towers must have been assisted in their collapse by explosives, more specifically thermite or nanothermite, which is believed to have been present in the dust at Ground Zero. But if the skeptics are right, then how could anyone plant the sufficient amount of explosives into the buildings ahead of time without raising suspicion? Ben Fountain, who worked on the 47th floor of the South Tower, said the government knew the buildings were a target, and over the past few weeks, people had been evacuated a number of times, which was unusual. Although he believes this was simply a safety protocol, as they had an inkling that something was going to happen, people say the evacuation would have given enough time to plant explosives in areas where workers may spot them if they had not been evacuated. But what is the official story? The official story is that the fires at both World Trade Centers 1 and 2 caused support trusses of the buildings to weaken and the weight of the top floors pile drive down, causing the tower's collapse. However, each tower is designed to survive the impact and fire from a collision by an airliner carrying 23,000 gallons of fuel. The planes that hit the towers were each carrying just 10,000 gallons of fuel. So, if like the official story states, the buildings came down by the plane's impact and following fires, how does this explain both towers falling in under 10 seconds? This is the same amount of time an object would have taken to hit the ground at the height of the World Trade Centers, meaning both towers fell with virtually no resistance from the perfectly undamaged metal and concrete below the plane's impact points. There doesn't seem to be any answers to that question, apart from the official pile drive theory or the use of explosives. But surely if there were explosives inside the buildings, this would have been seen and heard by many. Well, there are quite a few people on camera saying they heard loud explosions shortly before the towers fell, and thousands of engineers, scientists, and demolition experts have exerted their belief that the towers may have been assisted in their collapse, as they could not have fallen with as much precision as they did from fires. So the question still remains, were the towers assisted in their collapse by planned explosives? And if so, could the demolition team responsible live with themselves, knowing they killed thousands of innocent people? Okay, so all of the above could easily be a coincidence that just seems like there is more to the story, but Building 7 is where things get very mysterious. Building 7 was positioned on the same site as the Twin Towers, and on 9/11, after the towers had fallen, Building 7 unexpectedly collapsed 7.5 hours later. The building was not hit by a plane and only had minimal damage from falling debris. It did, however, have a fire inside the building, and this is what the official statement said brought this building down. But on the day of the attack, something else strange happened. A BBC News correspondent reported the collapse of World Trade Center 7 20 minutes before it happened.
Now, more on the latest building collapse in New York. You might have heard a few moments ago, I was talking about the Salomon Brothers building collapsing. Jane Stanley. Jane, what more can you tell us about the Salomon Brothers building and its collapse?
Well, only really what you already know. Details are very, very sketchy. As you can see behind me, the Trade Center appears to be still burning. We see these huge clouds of smoke and ash, and we know that behind that there's an empty piece of what was a very familiar New York skyline, a symbol of the financial prosperity of this city, but completely disappeared now, and New York is still unable to take on board what has happened to them today.
Now, it's not sure if this was just a mess up with communication, which is understandable with all the chaos going on, or that its destruction was planned ahead of time and they messed up the schedule. But then an interview of Larry Silverstein was released in 2002 of him saying, "We decided to pull Building 7. This isn't a theory, this isn't just word of mouth or speculation, this is an actual video of Larry, the owner of the World Trade Centers, saying that firefighters decided to pull Building 7.
I remember getting a call from the fire department commander telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. I said, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull, and then we watched the building collapse.
Now, the word pull in demolition terminology means to set off the explosions that will bring the building down. If this was the case with Building 7, then how is the building fitted with explosives and brought down in an operation that takes weeks, if not months, just a few hours after the Twin Towers were hit? Surely everyone would be more focused on helping victims than thinking about bringing down Building 7. Now, the official 9/11 commission states that Building 7 was damaged from falling debris and came down due to fire weakening just one column. If this is true, then what is Larry talking about?
I said, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull, and then we watched the building collapse.
But this isn't the only conspiracy surrounding Larry Silverstein. On July 24th, just 2 months before the attack, he purchased a $3.2 billion 100-year lease on World Trade Center 1 and 2, and took out insurance policies that covered from terrorism, which paid him around $5 billion after the September attack. Naturally, he has been blamed as having insider information, and that is his reasoning to buy the buildings. After all, the World Trade Centers were filled with huge amounts of now illegal asbestos, and many say they were a bad buy. Granted, by 2001, half of the asbestos had been removed, but it's believed there would have been three options that would eventually had to have been made as the buildings continued to get outdated. The asbestos would have had to be removed and replaced, either while the towers were occupied or not. Both would have cost millions and millions of dollars. Or the towers could slowly be dismantled and new towers could be built. This is estimated to have cost an unknown amount, far more than the towers were worth. However, if they were destroyed by an act of terror, then the asbestos would be taken care of and a huge insurance claim could be paid, and a plot would be left for new buildings. Larry was also suspiciously not in on the day of the attack, despite being there almost every morning on the run-up to September the 11th. This all sounds very suspicious, but before you blame Larry, when you dig deeper, you will find out that he only got the lease on the World Trade Centers as the original bidder pulled out last minute, and there were over 30 people trying to obtain the building, any of which had just as good a chance as he did. It's also interesting to find out that despite the asbestos, which can instantly sound like Larry was in on it for the insurance money, the World Trade Center buildings were actually a very good buy, hence the 30 plus bidders trying to get a lease. So if you look at it one way, you can see why people say Larry had advanced knowledge of the attack and purchased the buildings to profit from the insurance. Or was he just doing what he does best and buying property in New York, and the insurance was just the fact that the World Trade Centers had been a target for terrorism in the past? After all, would Larry, an already billionaire with more money than he could ever need, really be responsible or in on an attack that killed thousands of people just for a few extra billion in insurance money? It does all seem strange, and you can see why people are pointing at him, but it could just be a coincidence. However, back to Building 7. After Larry's interview and the official verdict on Building 7's collapse, nearly 2,000 architects and structural engineers signed a petition for a new investigation into its destruction, saying buildings simply do not fall down like this due to fire, especially in under 7 seconds and in such a controlled state. To date, no further investigations have taken place, and the official reasoning behind Building 7's destruction has remained the same. Once all is said and done, why on earth would the government have any involvement in the mass killing and destruction that took place on that day? If, like the skeptics believe, it was an inside job, then why? Why would they do this? It's thought Osama bin Laden, who apparently denied any involvement in the attacks, but then appears to have changed his mind in a video that many believe is fake, was set up and was used as a patsy for America to invade Iraq for various reasons, mainly oil. But would they kill innocent people simply to go to war with another country? It sounds obscene, but then people bring up Operation Northwoods. Operation Northwoods was a 1962 false flag operation to fake a terrorist attack on American civilians and blame it on the Cuban government in order to invade their country. Thankfully, the operation was rejected by the Kennedy administration, but still, the thought that something like this was even contemplated certainly doesn't reassure the 9/11 skeptics. It seems with the information we have, there are a handful of believed scenarios for 9/11. 1. It was an entire government cover-up and the terrorists were framed. 2. It was a terrorist attack by Al-Qaeda. However, the government could have tightened up their security and possibly prevented the attack. And perhaps there were explosives in the building, but the government simply could not admit they slipped up so badly by allowing the terrorists to get into the buildings and plant explosives. Or thirdly, the government or other insiders knew it was coming and exaggerated the impact by planting explosives in buildings 1, 2, and 7. Unfortunately, we may never know the full story about what happened, but should never forget the victims and the heartbreak their family and friends have endured since. Although I would love to hear all of your theories in the comments, please be considerate. Thousands of people died, and if you have nothing better to say than just blame people without giving adequate information to back your claims, then simply pay your respect to those involved instead of fueling an argument. Thank you for watching, and once again, my heart goes out to all of those whose lives were affected by this tragic event.
All right, so that was Conspiracy Theories and Unanswered Questions, and I wanted to play that because it does include that Silverstein interview about World Trade Center 7 and getting a call from the fire department and him admitting that he decided to pull it. There's already been so many lives lost to just pull it. And a short while later, you know, then it came down. So right there is another smoking gun, and that's also something that, you know, the media and government and people want you to forget. They want you to forget about World Trade Center 7 going down. They want you to forget about that admission. And especially with World Trade Center 7, that it was a controlled demolition. And once you come to that conclusion, then of course you look at Towers 1 and 2 and the similarity. And it's not a far stretch to go, yeah, those were controlled demolitions as well. There simply would not have been enough jet fuel to create the heat needed to melt and weaken steel beams. You know, tens and tens of stories of steel beams, especially at the core. The pancake theory, that's debunkable. Go to architects and engineers for 9/11. Look up RichardGage911.org. And he talks a lot about that. And even architects do not agree with this theory that NIST put out, this whole pancake theory, especially in regards to World Trade Center 7. And then with Towers 1 and 2, number one, a lot of the jet fuel would have been burned up almost instantly upon impact, right? That's the huge explosion, you know. So plane impact towers, and there's this huge explosion. Well, that explosion, that fire coming out the side of the buildings just after they were hit, that's the jet fuel burning. So there wouldn't have been nearly enough jet fuel, that theory, to explain why towers wanted to went down. So there's that. And people tend to question, well, when would they have ever been able to plant this? That takes a lot of planning. You know, any controlled demolition takes planning. And I'm like, yeah, you know, maybe after that bombing attempt, was it 1993, I think, of the truck bombing, there are a lot of witness reports out there that state, you know, seeing like after hours, supposed, you know, maintenance crews and stuff. So if it was planned in advance long enough, you could get people in there disguised as regular maintenance people, elevator maintenance people, whatever, electricians, stuff like that, being able to get in there to plant explosives in there. And maybe it was a contingency thing. Maybe it was done, you know, years before. We just never knew it. Maybe exactly for that reason. What if something does happen? Instead of allowing the buildings to teeter-totter, I mean, imagine if, you know, the half of the top of those towers fell sideways. Then it would have damaged huge area around it, several buildings around it. So I think it makes sense that these explosives were planted there well before 9/11 happened.
And maybe that contingency plan that made sense, you know, was used as the reason behind it. You know, I believe that it was an inside job. And or I believe that there was a lot of Israeli Mossad involvement as well. And there's a lot of reasons for this. If you look up Israeli Mossad 9/11, you'll see that there's a lot of things out there to get you to believe that it was involved in the planning of the execution of 9/11. Why? Because, you know, they probably also helped with the planning and execution of the goal for destabilizing the Middle East. Who benefits from that the most? Israel. Israel is surrounded by countries that hate them and hate America, and America has been financially supporting Israel for decades. Continue to, you know, in foreign aid, which Israel is a prosperous country. I don't understand why they need so much aid from us, right? But I think it's bribe money. You know, it's to gain intelligence. Utilizing Israeli intelligence, which is one of the best in the world, hands down, on intelligence gathering in neighboring countries like Iraq, like Syria, like Afghanistan, like Pakistan, like Turkey, you know, all of those countries that constitute the Middle East. There's that. So I believe that they were definitely involved as well as our own government. I believe if our own government did not orchestrate it, our government allowed it to happen for those reasons. There was a lot of, you know, trillions of dollars in war money to be made using 9/11 as the excuse. And then there's also that, you know, here's a story that, you know, part of it that not a lot of people talk about. And it is the gold that was stored. And I have a 5-minute clip that touches on this thing. Like, this 5-minute clip is from Loose Change, the documentary Loose Change. And so this clip is from that talks about it. But this was something that I read about long before Loose Change ever came up. And I read about, you know, our government story says that all the gold was recovered. That's what they want. Oh, yeah, all the gold that was stored in the vaults below World Trade Center, I believe it was World Trade Center 4, but it was in the middle of being transferred to World Trade Center 6. I am getting the buildings right. They're moving all that gold. And reports from before 9/11 stated that there was so much of this gold, bullion, you know, gold and stuff being stored there. But then after the fact, later on, when the government says, oh, yeah, we've, you know, recovered all of it, how much? So what they reported was substantially less than what had been reported previously. So this is another big question. Biggest gold heist in U.S. history, in a nutshell. So I'm going to play this 5-minute clip that talks about it a little bit. And like I said, feel free to research it yourself. But I remember, you know, I wish I had all of the links that I had saved at the time. I mean, I remember... You know, I could talk more about 9/11 and that day and the reaction and stuff here a little bit later. But it, you know, the all of the stuff that I was reading up on it, I mean, I became pretty much like a bird dog when it came to anything explaining 9/11, the Pentagon, the towers, at the time. And I remember reading about this bowl, and I'm like, oh, you know, who ran off with all that gold? And if you think about it, I mean, this is a huge amount of gold. These are, you know, each one of those gold bars are heavy. I mean, you don't, it's a undertaking to move this stuff. And they did so via, like, there's underground tunnels and things going between the towers. And anyway, so this is only 5 minutes, but it does talk about the gold. And so I'm glad that I found something, because I kept remembering about that. And of course, I don't have the original articles that I read, you know, 21 years ago. I wish I still had those favorites, and I know even if I did, most of those things are long gone by now, I'm sure. But I just remember reading and saving so many links at the time that this was part of it, and it's just one of those big question marks as well. So here we go. This is only 5 minutes. The 5 minutes from Loose Change, World Trade Center, biggest gold heist in U.S. history, $300 billion in bars.
And now for the last question of all. Why would our government do such a thing? I hope you're sitting down. First, we have Larry Silverstein, the man who purchased the World Trade Center in July 2001. After September 11th, Silverstein demanded $7.2 billion from his insurers, claiming that each plane counted as a separate act of terrorism. However, on December 6th, 2004, the courts only reward him with $2.2 billion. Next, we have the put options that were placed on United Airlines, American Airlines, and Boeing. According to the San Francisco Chronicle, more than $2.5 million has remained unclaimed. As for 9/11 itself, Reuters reported that Comvar, a German computer company, is responsible for helping companies and accountants in New York restore their data from over 400 hard drives that were recovered from the World Trade Center's rubble. Comvar recovered information from 32 different computers that suggested insider trading took place on 9/11. Richard Wagner, an expert at Comvar: there is a suspicion that some people had advanced knowledge of the approximate time of the plane crashes in order to move out amounts exceeding $100 million. They thought that the records of their transactions could not be traced after the mainframes were destroyed. After their analysis, Comvar handed the results over to the FBI. Although the FBI was legally bound to investigate who was responsible, to date they have done no such thing. Moving on. According to Wikipedia, one of the world's largest gold depositories was stored underneath the World Trade Center. In 1993, the value of the gold was estimated at $1 billion, rumored to be owned by Kuwaiti interests. When the World Trade Center was destroyed, the amount of gold far exceeded the 1993 levels. The gold was finally recovered in its entirety in late 2001. Or was it? On November 1st, 2001, the Times Online reported that a large amount of gold was discovered in the wreckage of the World Trade Center. Mayor Rudolph Giuliani announced that more than $230 million was recovered from Ground Zero. However, the COMEX Metals Trading Division was storing gold bars for the Bank of Nova Scotia, Chase Manhattan Bank, Bank of New York, Hong Kong, and Shanghai Banking, totaling $950 million. And that's just one company. Rumor has it that over $160 billion in gold was stored in the World Trade Center. So where did all the gold go? Remember the gold that was found in November 2001? Reuters reported that it was discovered in the back of a 10-wheel truck, along with several cars, in a delivery tunnel underneath World Trade Center 5. No bodies were recovered. As workers got closer to the gold, authorities began restricting access to Ground Zero, joined by FBI and Secret Service agents. One worker, who was directed away from the tunnel, told a reporter, "If I tried to go down there, they would have shot me." Heavy machinery operators and others worked under the watchful eye of more than 100 armed officers. So let me get this straight. Gold from World Trade Center 4. was found underneath World Trade Center 5 in an empty delivery truck with an empty escort of cars. I think it's safe to say that they were running away from the South Tower. The question is, how did they know to flee from their stash when not even the firefighters inside the South Tower expected it to collapse? $167 billion in gold. $200 million is found. And that's just the money. After September 11th, President Bush had and continues to have permission to do and say whatever he wants, all under the pretext of 9/11. The Patriot Act. The Department of Homeland Security. Afghanistan. Iraq.
Got him. Good. Second one. Hit the other one.
It's time for America to accept 9/11 for what it was. A lie which killed thousands of people, only in turn killing hundreds of thousands more to make billions upon trillions of dollars. Are you angry yet? You should be. Every single attempt to investigate and uncover the truth behind 9/11 has been blackballed, ridiculed, and harassed by both the government and media alike for even daring to question the official story.
Jimmy Walter, who spent nearly $2 million on an advertising blitz to convince people here in New York and elsewhere that 9/11 was a self-inflicted wound. Jimmy, welcome. Why are you doing this?
I'm a patriot trying to defend this country from the real terrorists who have damaged and changed our country. I am asking the same questions that the widows and orphans, parents and friends of the victims of 9/11 are asking and have not had answered by either the 9/11 Commission nor by any real investigation to the mass murders that 66% of New Yorkers want investigated.
Okay, Jimmy,
So, yeah, that raises some questions about the gold that was being stored. It's pretty convenient. And to say that it was all recovered, but yet not all of it is accounted for. We recovered all of it, but yet more than half of what was known to be there prior to 9/11, they said from 1993, but then it increased from there. And I remember reading about this. There's a pretty big discrepancy between what was known to be there before September 11th and the amount that they say that they recovered. And so that was like a bonus. Now, if you think about it, those gold bars have definitely increased in value. Let me look it up. Wonder if I can find out what the gold spot price was in 2011. Gold spot price, September 2001. And we can see what it was. Okay, so let's see. Getting there. September. And of course, they're doing it every day, so I'm scrolling down to find what it was. September 11th, the gold spot price was $271.40. So think about that. $271. Right? So each one of those gold bars, you got to think about that. And that's per ounce, right? And the gold spot price today is $1,723 per ounce. So that's a lot of profit for whoever's been sitting on those gold bars this long, right? Or when it, peaked several years back when it went to, over $1,800 per ounce. And so if we, let's see, how many ounces of gold in a bar 400 troy ounces, or 438.9 ounces in one gold bar. So they had that much. That's huge. That's huge profit. So right now, let's see, just one 100-gram gold bar will spot price around $6,500 just for a 100-gram. When you get a 10-ounce gold bar, the spot price can vary between $13,000 to $20,000. So, you know, that's for a 10-ounce bar. That's huge when you think about it. That's a lot of bars of gold. That at the time was worth that much money, but now it's exploded. So there's some motivation right there. Steal some of that gold, let some of it be recovered, lie and say, oh, we recovered all of it, and then sit on that gold for a while and wait for the price to go up and make a buttload of money off of it. How ingenious is that? You know, I don't think I'm crazy for following the logic on that, right? I mean, there's just so much. So much out there. And if you're out there and you want to call in, like I said, feel free to do so. Keep me company. And if no one does and it's just me, then I'm going to continue playing some more clips. But if you want to call in, please do so. 563-999-3698. 563-999-3698. And press number 1 to talk to me. That lets me know on the switchboard. It raises your hand, and the switchboard lets me know you want to talk. And an alternate way, if you have any problems with calling in, if you want to use your computer, you can go to this show's episode link, go to blogtalkradio.com, look up Lucid Libertarian, pull up today's episode, and you should see a button that says Direct Connect. And that Direct Connect will do a pop-up dialer that will automatically dial you in. It will prompt you to put in your name, your display name, and get you connected. And then you can press 1 that way. So that's the alternate way. You feel free to use it. That's what it's there for. And that way you can use your computer browser if you have a good microphone on your laptop or desktop, or you're using a Bluetooth headset or something with your computer or laptop, that's a good way to also call in. And so with Corbett Report, he did a good one last year, 9/11 Truth Lessons Learned. He did this September 20th of last year. It's about 20 minutes long. And, you know, James Corbett, Corbett Report, check him out. Seriously, Corbett Report, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, two T's at the end of his name, Corbett Report, and definitely check it out. Last year I played all 4 segments of his 9/11 whistleblowers. And so obviously with, you know, 4 segments, it was pretty long, but you definitely want to watch that, especially Brian Jenkins, or Barry Jenkins. I mean, Barry Jenkins, is an eyewitness that was in World Trade Center 7, and he tells his story. And of course the media and others tried to, you know, tried to get him to change his timeline of what he remembered. And he's like, no, I was there, and this is what happened and when it happened. And so you'll want to check him out on Corbett Report Whistleblowers, but watch the whole thing. He also does an excellent one on 9/11 Trillions. where he gets into, you know, he talks about Rumsfeld the day before admitting to over $2 trillion being missing from the Pentagon and how that's a direct threat. You know, that's an awful lot of money to just not be accounted for, right? Especially, I mean, $2 trillion back 21 years ago, that's a significant sum of money, you know. And now it's like not even a blink of an eye, like $2 trillion, oh, that's nothing. You know, I mean, look at, and if the Pentagon couldn't account for that much money, then you got to kind of question, boy, and he also did another really good one September of 2020 called COVID-911 from Homeland Security to Biosecurity. Now I'm kind of a toss-up between the two. maybe I'll get the both. But when you think about all of that money and now with COVID and these trillions that have been spent with this COVID relief, and you got to think about, like, you know, how is any of this going to be thoroughly tracked or accounted for? And, of course, it's not. And the amount of fraud, you know, that's coming to light more and more is equating to a big, pretty big sum of money. I think it's something like $300 billion, $250 billion or something that has been found to have been fraudulent. But that's the tip in the iceberg when we're talking the trillions just for COVID. Yeah, so the fraud that we even know about or become aware about is just a sliver of all the potential and possible fraud that was done with all that money. And, I mean, if the Pentagon couldn't account for $2 trillion 21 years ago, how do you think any of those trillions in COVID relief funds are going to be tracked and accounted for? Of course they're not going to. It's just too much. Yeah, I think I'm going to play that Corbett Report, 9/11 Truth Lessons Learned from September 20th of last year. It's about 21 minutes long. And here we go. 3, 2, 1, and launch.
You're listening to the Corbett Report. CorbettReport.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Corbett Report. I am your host, James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, coming to you, as always, from the sunny climes of Western Japan here on the 17th day of September 2021 with episode 408 of the Corbett Report podcast, 9/11 Truth, Lessons Learned? And yes, that is going to be obviously the question on the table for today, and I have my own answers to that question, as you will know, if you watched the 9/11 global live stream that was broadcast live on the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiries global live stream on Saturday, September 11th, 2021, and then was available for access for the following week for people who donated to that that live stream. If you did miss it, well, here is my presentation specifically. That was a pre-recorded video that they did play on that live stream. It deals obviously with the topic of 9/11 Truth at 20 years old and what it can and cannot tell us for the development of whatever movement is going to go forward into the brave new world order of the COVID-1984, COVID-9/11 biosecurity state. I think there's some important materials to chew on here. And if this doesn't whet your appetite enough, I would suggest that you also look back at COVID-911, COVID-9/11 that I released last year on the 19th anniversary of September 11th in order to better understand that transition that is clearly taking place between homeland security and biosecurity and what that transition means and how we will move forward. There's a lot of important issues to deal with here today, and so I'm going to leave this on the table while you are all, I'm sure, anxiously waiting at the edge of your seat, waiting for the next part of the Al-Qaeda documentary, False Flags, The Secret History of Al-Qaeda, to drop. Part 2, 9/11, is on its way, but as I hope you can appreciate, these things take a considerable amount of time and effort. And Brock and myself, we are both working fervently and feverishly behind the scenes on this. And as an example of that, I'll get Brock, can you put up a screenshot of the project file as it stands and just show people a little bit of how much effort goes into the creation of these videos. Anyway, on that note, it will be coming soon, but not yet. So continue to wait. In the meantime, I hope you get something out of this presentation today, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this subject. Without any further ado, here's my presentation from the 9/11 Global Livestream, 9/11 Truths, Lessons Learned. 20 years. 2 decades. Half my life have I spent in the smoldering ruins of those exploded towers. Picked my way through the 8-mile-long debris field in Shanksville. Huddled in the blast hole of the Army's accounting offices in the E-ring of the Pentagon. Take off your shoes and belt, suspect. Single file, digital fingerprints and photographs, please. Don't worry, we're just looking for the terrorists. Speak up, prisoner. The NSA is recording this conversation for posterity. Machines of loving grace are scanning your emails and monitoring your social media posts. All in the name of homeland security, you understand. How much cash do you want to withdraw? What for? Why don't you just use a card like everyone else? We're going to have to run a background check on you for this. After all, you might be one of them. And yet, I'm one of the lucky ones. At least I got to live half my life in the old world. The see your friend off at the airport gate world. The government wouldn't spy on us world. The papers please is a sign of tyranny world. That world, too, was a lie. But at least they needed to tell that lie to the public, because people still believed in it. Now? Now there's an entire generation who have grown up in the shadow of those towers, who have never known a world that was not haunted by the hobgoblin of terrorism, who have never thought twice about giving up the freedoms they barely knew they had in the name of fighting the invisible enemy. How can we blame them for not understanding the gravity of this moment, here, today, giving up those few freedoms that remain in the name of fighting the new phantom menace? Me? I came to the party 5 years late. The rallies, the C-SPAN broadcasts, the street activism. Investigate 9/11. Impeach Cheney first. Remember Building 7. How innocent that all seems today, 20 years later. How naive. But why not? We had the t-shirts, we had the slogans, we had the spindles of DVD, and we had the momentum on our side. By the 6th anniversary, it was undeniable. A majority of Americans wanted an investigation of Bush and Cheney's actions on 9/11. A full 32% wanted an immediate impeachment. 67% believed that the 9/11 Commission had failed by not investigating the destruction of World Trade Center Building 7. So what happened? Well, hope and change happened, of course. Never underestimate the sedative effect that a pure, unadulterated hit of hopium spiked directly into the veins of the body politic can have in quelling public dissent. It works every time. But it was more than that. 9/11 Truth was not derailed by the Obamasiah. At least, Not completely. No. 9/11 Truth was derailed by 9/11 Truth. You see, the truth about 9/11 is as remarkably simple as it is incredibly powerful. We were lied to about 9/11. Period. End of debate. No one who knows anything about 9/11 could possibly deny that. I'd like to see them try. That is the basis for a movement. With that one truth, we could demolish an entire edifice of lies. They lied about 9/11. They didn't just cover up the truth, they actively suppressed it. Everyone who is guilty of keeping the truth about 9/11 from the public is thereby an accessory to those crimes. Every one of the actions that followed on from those lies, the Patriot Act, the War of Terror, the deaths of millions of Afghans and Iraqis and Libyans and Syrians, the construction of the police state, even the blowing of the post-9/11 housing bubble that led to the global financial crisis, are as criminal as the events of 9/11 themselves. And those who have justified their criminal actions by recourse to the lies of 9/11 are thereby guilty of terrorism. Those who committed their signatures to the Patriot Act are the terrorists. Those who invoked the doctrine of preemptive self-defense to justify their wars of aggression around the world are the terrorists. Those who paraded on the corpses at Ground Zero in order to justify their own political agenda are, by definition, the terrorists. This isn't rocket science. It isn't even controlled demolition science. It's just plain, simple truth. But somewhere along the way, that plain truth about 9/11 got complicated. As the years turned into decades, the movement lost sight of that simple truth. Speculations became hypotheses. Hypotheses became theories. Theories became doctrines. Doctrines became dogma. Soon, there was no movement. There were only egos preferring their own totalizing explanation of 9/11, right down to the minutiae of operational details that they could not possibly have access to, unless they were in on the plot, that is. As if the very intelligence agencies they were accusing of perpetrating the attacks didn't have documentably a half century of experience derailing citizen investigations of deep state operations with false leads and cookie crumb trails that lead to nowhere. Now, there are no rallies, no C-SPAN broadcasts, no street activism. Just the remaining 9/11 truthers in the shrinking 9/11 truth tent denouncing each other as loudly as possible for deviating from the catechism of their preferred dogma. The planes were drones! The planes were missiles! What? You believe there were planes? Such is the cacophony of the rancorous dogmatists that they can barely hear Cass Sunstein cackling in the background. Mission accomplished. But, in retrospect, perhaps it was inevitable. After all, a movement that focuses on the events of a single day is destined to lose sight of the forest of the 20-year conspiracy that brought those events about for the trees of the events themselves. And a movement that focuses on one day in the increasingly distant past will find it increasingly difficult to stay relevant to the political present. The 9/11 liars have human psychology on their side. The lies are seared into the public consciousness. The retractions and debunkings of those lies pass largely unnoticed. And in the end, the pyrotechnics of 9/11 have had their intended effect. They have traumatized much of the public and hypnotized those who know they're being lied to. Blinded by the fireworks, 9/11 Truth could never find the will to turn away from the explosions and take the movement to the next level. 9/11 is not a series of dusty facts about demolition physics and airplane turning radiuses. As the 9/11 liars know all too well, it is a talisman that can be wielded to scare the public into submission. But, like all talismans, this one too has begun to lose its power. Whereas once the very invocation of terrorism was enough to justify an entire political platform, now not even the specter of Al-Qaeda, the bad Al-Qaeda, not the good Al-Qaeda in Syria, or ISIS, ISIS-K that is, the new scarier version of ISIS, is enough to catch the public's attention. No. The terrorists needed a new talisman, a new 9/11. And here it is, right on schedule. A new terror has been unleashed upon the world to traumatize the public once again. But this time, the Phantom Menace is not a bearded Muslim boogeyman. No, it's a virus. At least in the good old Homeland Security state erected to keep us safe from the terrorists, you could protest, "But I'm not a terrorist." It might not have saved you, but at least you could raise the point. But in the new biosecurity state, your cries of innocence will not be permitted. "I'm sorry, ma'am, but the test says you're an asymptomatic spreader. We're going to have to quarantine you. It's for your own good." There is resistance, of course, just as there was resistance to the 9/11 lies. But is it a movement? Already it's devolving into egos and dogma and bickering. "Ivermectin is our only hope." "What are you talking about? The vaccine is the bioweapon." "What? You believe viruses exist?" "Wait. What's that?" I swear I could hear Cass Sunstein laughing in the background. Of course the terrorists are laughing. Why wouldn't they be? They've got us scrutinizing the trees again while they're busy encircling the forest. This isn't about COVID-19. This has nothing to do with the virus. This is about finishing the job that the terrorists started on 9/11. The job of locking down the planet. Oh, sure. Examine the details. Put the pieces together on the health passports and the digital ID, the mandatory injections and government permission to leave your home, the central bank digital currencies and the Great Reset and the Fourth Industrial Revolution. We do need to know these things. But don't get stuck marveling at the pyrotechnics. Don't get stuck fighting your allies because they won't subscribe to your dogma. Don't get stuck focusing on what happened in 2019 so hard that you miss what's happening in 2021. Or some 20-year-old who's just joining the party today will blink and he'll find himself in 2039 wondering how he spent half his life in the shadow of a scamdemic. The terrorists know all of this, of course. It's how they stay in power. We don't have to speculate about this. We just have to take them at face value when they tell it to us. Like when Karl Rove admonished Ron Suskind for being part of the reality-based community who believe that solutions emerge from your judicious study of discernible reality. But, he insisted, that's not the way the world really works anymore. We are an empire now, and when we act, we create our own reality. And while you're studying that reality, judiciously, as you will, we'll act again,
creating other new realities, which you can study too. And that's how things will sort out. We are history's actors, and you, all of you, will be left to just study what we do. And here we are. History's actors have created other new realities, and the same 9/11 truth movement that spent the last 20 years judiciously studying the last set of lies will spend the next 20 years judiciously studying these ones. Assuming we have 20 years left to spend in idle study, that is. Or we could become history's actors. Stop waiting for events to happen so we can judiciously study them and start creating events, structures, institutions of our own. Can you imagine if the 9/11 truth movement had devoted one-tenth of the time and energy and resources that it spent arguing over pyroclastic dust clouds and measuring entry and exit holes to something actually productive? Creating self-sustaining intentional communities? Growing the free market and expanding the use of alternative currencies? Creating our own businesses and institutions and building out alternative communication infrastructure and building up our own media? I don't have the answer. No one person does. But I can tell you this. We cannot afford to spend the next two decades judiciously studying the way our most basic rights, the right to refuse medical experimentation, the right to interact and transact with our friends and neighbors as we see fit, the right to leave our own home, are being stripped from us one by one. If we don't resist the biosecurity state with all our might, refuse to comply with its dictates, refuse to shut ourselves in and lay down when the government tells us to, then we are the terrorists, terrorizing our own children and grandchildren and consigning those generations yet unborn to the maws of a technocratic tyranny beyond any sci-fi dystopia. In the meantime, we look back yet again at that September day 20 years ago, not as a single day when the world changed forever, but as a signpost along the path, yet another in a chain of events and decisions and choices made by history's actors, us. I may never quite escape the shadow of those towers, but in that shadow, we can build towers of our own. The choice is ours, for now. For the Corbett Report in Western Japan, I am James Corbett.
Can you hear now, Lori?
Yeah, I can't hear either.
What's going on, Nathan? We can have an awful party, just as you and I.
Yeah. As soon as that last guy quit talking, I guess he quit talking, but it just went nothing. I'm just into the chat room to see if she's awake.
You think she fell off the stool?
Yeah. Fell asleep on us.
Yeah.
Hello?
Hello?
Heard a voice.
Hi, this is Suzette. I just came on.
Suzette.
I called in to let her know, that there was no sound, and then I got unmuted finally, and I heard you guys.
Yeah, me and Nathan thought we had it all to ourselves. Be more to go around, but look like we got to share it with you now.
Well, somebody had to unmute. That's weird.
I was sitting here listening to it doing something, and it stopped. And I looked, and when I didn't cut that off, I didn't use it. I'm like, I'm crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Man. But I'm just saying, somebody had to unmute me. That's the show.
You know, you're talking about this 9/11. I don't know which was most egregious, or the 2020 election or 9/11.
God. No, that's right up there. They both pretty much knocked us off our rocker.
Yeah. I'd say it's a tough time, but we have loss of life with 9/11, the people that were in the towers and whatever, you know. But still, they're both bad.
Yeah, you had people lost life, but the explanation that they give for which the circumstances arose of losing life don't really hold too much water for those who know about those things. You know, they showed a picture of the Pentagon after the explosion.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly the airplane was supposed, and all the light standards in right in front of it, within I guess 100 yards, even in, all the light standards are still in place right after the event. And a plane flying that low should have knocked them down.
The wing.
You see that, Nathan?
No, I didn't. I didn't look at it much back then, but I look at the hole in the Pentagon. And somebody asked the question later, what about the landing gear? Because any time a plane crashes, this guy said the landing gear and the engine is there.
Well, they had an engine, I think, but the engine wasn't for that particular plane that was supposed to have been flying into it.
Well, the Pentagon, they also didn't recover any bodies. Disintegrated, I guess. Not to mention the wingspan of the plane itself. The hole was as far as the width. It's just
You would have dental records on the passengers. The passengers of the plane, you would have dental records.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought it was neat, man. You can eat candy. You can eat candy, chew gum, and that'll tear your teeth up. But a fire is the only thing that can't touch your teeth. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Shanksville is what gets me. I mean, they have pictures of that still. They had them then, and when they showed them then, as far as the plane going in there and it's smoldering, it was like, okay, so there's no debris. There's nothing there. There's just a hole that has, like, some trash in there, and it's a very small hole. No way a plane, but supposedly the plane just entered the ground and disappeared. The ground just sucked it up.
Yeah. Here's another one for you. Here's another one for you. If you go to a site called informingchristians.com, it's a lady, Deborah J.M. Smith, some family members, survivors, people that had family on that plane got a hold of her, and she did the research, and she found out it was a Muslim guy here, architect, that was putting together the memorial. And everything on this is Islam. If you go and look at it, go to her site. He does a better job than I do. But here's what I noticed in 2008, I believe it was. They did I believe it was on 9/11. They had a vote in Congress, and it was unanimous in the Congress and the Senate. A resolution to call America 9/11 a day of service, and every year around now, we always said back in the old days, this is a day in infancy. You attacked us, we're coming after you. But we're saying a day of service, and you hear people on 9/11 doing stuff like we're going to pick up trash in the park, or we're going to go to the beach, and you know, throw the turtles back in the water, or we're going to do stuff that we can do. We're going to help that little old lady out in the neighborhood that needs her grass mow. A day of service, and this is where I ain't got nothing wrong with serving people or the community, but the Muslims, when they attacked us, they said we were going to be their servants. And I was like, I was screaming.
Well, you look at, look at these pictures that she's got on her, Martise. You got the one, especially the one with the helicopter taking off and the police car in the foreground. You see that? Now, that was just after it happened because that was after it just happened because you got fire hoses spraying water on the debris. Now, mm-hmm. once you look at all the light standards in mm-hmm. front of the area where the plane was supposed to hit, well, if a plane yes. was flying that low, the wings would have took those light standards off, and they're standing perfectly
Absolutely.
Still.
Mm-hmm. Straight up, not singed or anything. They're straight, perfectly fine. Yep. That's an anomaly.
Well, I heard something way back a long time ago. I only heard it one time driving down the road at nighttime. I can't really write stuff down. But this guy was being interviewed, and he was saying the elevator company that served the elevators in those towers, got, somebody else got the bid, and it was a small no-name company. You know, you wouldn't – it was just like a small – it's like this corporation versus this – mom and pop operation got the job, and there's not, we don't hear a lot about that, but I was thinking, man, that'd be the perfect thing. The guy that does maintenance, he can get up, he can get out of that elevator, he can get up in the walls, and, you know, I just thought that was weird, and I haven't heard many people talking about it afterwards, so I don't know if that's something somebody made up just for ratings.
Oh, I don't know. I know there's an actual witness that testified it kind of got buried as far as the report. They have people who testified, and they didn't use their testimony, people who worked in the building, and apparently they were having evacuations, like earlier that week. What do you call it? Emergency, I don't know. Practice, I guess, and so the Twin Towers would be evacuated, and they did it a couple of times a week, and it was like weird because they had never done it before, but then it was thought that since there was rumors, because it was a security that was notified as far as rumors going around that they could possibly be attacked or America could be attacked or whatever, and I thought that was interesting. I hadn't heard that before. But, yeah, as far as them having practice, earlier that week, and then on Tuesday they had the attacks. And so during that time, people are speculating because of that statement that maybe that was the time that people, bad actors, had the basically free access to those buildings to put the explosives in there in order to have that controlled demolition effect. And then the nanothermite that they found there within the rubble and pile. So, yeah. And then they have the recording of, I can't think of his name now, the guy that bought the Twin Towers or leased all seven towers.
Mm-hmm.
And they have his recording after the Twin Towers had gone. He was being interviewed shortly after that, and he had told the news person that interviewed them that he had told the firefighters, because he got a call and they said, building seven is on fire, what do you want us to do? And he said, we've already had loss of life, quote, we've had enough loss of life today, go ahead and just pull it. And apparently pull it means in demolition language or terminology, whatever, to go ahead and light up the explosives. And because that one fell too, exactly like the other two towers. So isn't that bizarre or interesting? But, we'll never know. It's all.
Well, you know more probably 80% of American public.
Yeah, but because we don't really hear everything, we got so many, mm-hmm. It's hard to figure out who is really our enemy in all this mess. The guy that's standing up there in front of us as a politician, and he's the man, and we're going to make this right. I don't know if he's on my side. I don't know if he's really an enemy or a friend of our state,
Right.
I was going to say, I understand intelligence and you got to keep things quiet because like they used to say in another time, loose lips sink ships. I understand that. But when you see this game of you never do get answers, questions answered, and I don't know.
It's hard to determine who's
right.
behind a lot of this.
Mm-hmm.
But as time go by, and you know the thing that's an abnormality is that these events are occurring within people's lifespan. So people who is astute and analytically in their thinking, they live when one of the or two of these events occurred, and they can put pieces together based on today's time, and they begin to see a pattern here. Like you say, at Shanksville, where was the parts of the airplane? Where is airplane debris and parts here? And buildings just don't fall the way they done with those two towers.
Mm-hmm.
I put buildings up like this starting when I was 19. I had a company that done it. Of course, not those two. For a couple of decades.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, those buildings wouldn't pancake like that. If the upper floors are lighter than the bottom floors, it just would not happen like that. I would have slept down on the.
Right.
I would have slept down, camped out on the lobby floor, and you could have ran planes into those buildings at that elevation, at that altitude, all day long.
That's the foundation. The foundation.
Yeah, or just all because how I don't know how high the towers were, how many floors that they had. But
it was old.
Yes, and they tried. Go ahead.
100 stories, I think. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The fire up on top on the first couple of floors up there, like you said. Now they're saying that the jet fuel had heated up the steel so much that it just collapsed. The trusses collapsed and everything. Okay, so that was the areas that were exposed to the heat, but what about the rest? The rest of the floors that weren't? Let's say it was the first 5 floors that were exposed, and then you have the rest of the 90 floors below it that were not. Like you said, Bianchi, they shouldn't have been affected whatsoever. Even the weight of the first 5 floors, maybe it might have split or just maybe hung on to,
mm-hmm.
or hung over. And rest of the floors.
The sixth floor could have
no
supported the weight of the first
felt.
5 floors from the top. The upper floors
okay.
are the lightest steel. You could have brought out 4 floors of steel on a set of flatbed trucks. Plus, that steel was covered with fireproofing, which probably had at least a 2-hour fire rating. That's when they spray the stuff on there that looks like oatmeal.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and by that time, the damn fuel would have burnt away. Then another thing. Yeah, and see, another thing is that when structural steel get hot, it sags. It just doesn't break away from columns. Those beams that ran into the columns was welded to those columns.
Mm-hmm.
So when structural steel heats, and it gets to the point where it starts to sag, that's what it does. It just sag. It doesn't break off. Like you cut it off with you slice in bologna.
they gave us like a scenario almost if it was burning wood, building made out of wood as far as it just breaking and falling in on itself.
It begins to,
the
terminology is yield. It yields. It began to yield from the heat. You can see a fire that occurred at a building that has structural steel supports and come back the next day and you see where they sag. They didn't just pull away from the connections at the ends as if you was pulling out a tooth.
Well, yeah, this. I'm not an expert on this stuff like you are, but I do know because I drive a gas tanker, we're not allowed to park within 300 yards of a bridge. or any place where people dwell or assemble, because if this thing blows up and catches on fire, the bridge is still going to be there, but the heated up metal still might be what causes the failed inspection. So that's why, you know, because even though it's still there and people are driving across it, you know, it's weakened. But it doesn't like to break in half.
It ain't gonna. It's not gonna break off. Matter.
And if it's close enough, if it's close enough, it will dry up the concrete, and it'll be like, you know, you can walk over and put your initials in it with a stick.
Yeah, you know, it was some place where they had a fire. I think that was in Atlanta, where the fire up underneath a overpass that was set by some homeless guy. And that dude burned for a long time, and it was underneath the bridge. You know, we call them overpass. It was going across the street. That's what it was. The highway above was going across the street. It didn't collapse. It just don't, structure steel just don't do that. Structure steel will get hot. Well, it will begin to yield. Then after the fire goes away, it cools off, and there it is. You just can't walk up to it and snatch it off with your hands. You have to use torches to cut it loose.
Right. Hey,
yep.
Can you hear
building
me?
Seven that hadn't.
Yes.
Yes.
Hey, my internet is down over here. It just went down while I was cliff. And I'm trying to use my T-Mobile hotspot for my connection. So slow, like it's not very strong. So it took me forever just to try to get my switchboard loaded up and unmute you. And it didn't want to call in.
Oh, no.
So I'm having all kinds of problems over here. Like my whole internet down. My Xfinity internet, everything's down. I'm scooting along with two bars on my 4G signal on my T-Mobile plan.
Well, me and Nathan and Suzette been having a good discussion by ourselves.
We had a show without you.
Pionki?
Yes, ma'am.
It's Doll.
Oh, Doll?
Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, I was able to unmute Doll. It takes a while, though. It took like 3 or 4 minutes just to unmute myself.
No, I unmuted myself. I drove from my sister's as fast as I could. We were at a birthday party. And you said, hey, I can't get the show online. So I was like, oh, my gosh, I'll drive home. So I'm here.
Oh, shit. I didn't mean for you. Yeah, I didn't realize that you were busy.
No. You've got fires down your area, and it's probably affecting Bonneville.
They evacuated an area south of Salem, and then also east of me. And but that the closest to me is contained. But the other fire, the wildfires are going kind of crazy right now. So that's probably what happened is everything's down. I'm surprised I even have enough signal to use my hotspot with T-Mobile. I'm sure that that's getting bogged down too.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Your connection's real spotty.
Is this what it's going to be like when the Russians come for us?
Yeah, and Ukraine.
Or the Chinese, or both?
Yeah.
All of the above. But that's what the Patriot Act opened up.
Wow.
Hey, Doll, if you're logged in, are you able to open up the chat?
Yeah.
I put a couple messages in. I don't. It's there. I'm
well,
in.
No, I'm in.
Okay, yeah, because it's not loading up the chat for me.
All right.
I'll
try.
So I can't see the chat now. But at least I could get to the switchboard and unmute. Like, Okay, I can at least do that.
Okay. I just opened up chat, and I'm going to open it up on Messenger.
I was wondering how I got unmuted.
Yeah, I saw you, and I'm like, okay, I can unmute. I know I can do that.
So is that lightweight?
Hello? Hi, doll.
Is that lightweight? Hi.
Is that a new voice?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, we got Miyaki, Paul, and myself now.
So we have Suzette, Nathan, Pionki, Lorianne, and myself. Saul.
I don't know how much dead air. How long was there dead air after that ended? I don't even know because it went out. It went down right in the middle of the clip, and I was struggling to get internet and everything. I have no idea how much dead air there was before you guys called in.
It was about, I don't know, 10
minutes.
What?
About 10 or 12 minutes.
Ugh. I hate that. And you guys just hung out and holding it just to see?
Die hard.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I would have tried, you know, I would have started another clip if I could have, but it took everything that my poor little T-Mobile hotspot connection used to burn the switchboard. Oh, but yeah, and you, Suzette, you were mentioning, I played that, I have that like 30 second, but I can't get into the host line,
right,
so I'm calling in on the guest line.
All right.
So I couldn't get into the host line, and I can't direct connect in, so I can't play any clips.
I can. I'm in the studio. What do you need?
Are you able to play the clip of the 34-second clip, 9/11, WTC7, Larry Silverstein interview?
Oh, that's his name, Larry Silverstein, yeah. The one that I was talking to these guys about earlier that had used the term pull. Go ahead and pull it when... the fire department had called him and said, you know, what do you want us to do about Building 7? Yeah, go ahead, play that. That's a good one.
Do you have it under
Silverstein?
Yeah, do you have it under Silverstein or 9/11? What?
If you type in Larry, L-A-R-R-I, you should find it.
Okay.
This is what it feels like if we're stuck in a mine.
Yeah, exactly.
we can't see each other, but we can hear.
Middle of nowhere, Alaska. All right, here we go.
Yeah,
wait,
and I'm
Ellie.
The one that doesn't have an internet connection enough to even get into my own show as the host.
I want my money.
Thank you,
back.
Elon Musk. So is it L-E-R, what?
L-A-R-R-Y, Larry Silverstein. Let's type in L-A-R-R-Y in the search.
All right. All right, we're not getting L-A-R-R-Y. All right, we're working on it.
I'm going to try to see if it'll allow me to direct connect in. To before.
All right, here we go. Okay.
Why isn't it letting me play? Sorry, guys. This doesn't normally happen.
This reminds me of like trying to fix a plane while it's still in flight.
Oh, you know why? Because I don't know why. And I trained you on this. So I have the clip up, and I click on it, and it will not play. And so... All right, we may have to move on.
Okay, well, I did have that in. I'm gonna try to refresh, but yeah, I just connected and it doesn't go through.
Here,
so,
I'm gonna refresh.
How long I'm down for?
Sorry. Anyway,
well,
so you want to carry on doing this?
One of the things people are pointing to as far as the skeptics, you know, for 9/11 being the official story that we were told was the passports, because there were four total that were found, and they were found, of course, the one that was found by the towers, then there was one in Philadelphia, and... What was the other one? Oh, there was another one found in luggage of one of the hijackers. There was 19 in total, but one of the hijackers left it in his luggage that never boarded the plane. And then there was one that was actually on the conveyor belt, and that was four. So, and that was never explained. Other than maybe it was stolen.
I thought about something during that time. And I never really, it wasn't something I thought about and told, you know, got my therapy on or anything. But I was telling a friend this, and she later sent me a thing from a guy in the Middle East that was talking about what I thought about. Here's what I was thinking. When 9/11 happened, this could have thrown the terrorists off. It's in the morning over on the East Coast, over on the middle and the west of the country, there's people still in bed, asleep, waiting for their alarm clock to start their day. So they wake up and it's, you know, it's right there. And I was thinking, because of the time change, if they made a mistake when they planned it, because if this would have happened at lunchtime on the East Coast, it would be in the morning over there. And what are the chances of these planes all across the country being filled with terrorists, and then all of a sudden at the right time they hit all of them in the air? They, you know, hijack all of them in the air. I was thinking, man, if that was their plan and they didn't think through, it's early, it's in the morning here, and it's not even, the day's not started on the West Coast. That might have been what got them. And then later I was talking to this lady, telling her, and she sent me a video of a guy in the Middle East talking about a plan of attacking America, and he gave that scenario of all the planes getting hijacked at the same time while it, you know, and I was wondering, I was just my creativity thinking that, and when she played me that, it's a friend I went to school with back in 84 and 85, she's like 80 or 81 years old now in a rest home out in California, and I thought that was really weird that I thought that, and it's not something I would call a radio show and give that idea, because somebody go, hey, that makes sense if we're gonna attack them, you know, but that was weird. There's a chance that get starting early at, you know, 8 or 8:30 on the East Coast. And they grounded everything. We have no idea how many terrorists got off, caught a cab, and got out of the area, and we never know. You know?
Yep, that's true. Very true.
Yeah.
I never recovered any black boxes from the ones from the planes that hit allegedly hit the Twin Towers, which I thought was interesting because the black box is in the back of the plane and the front of the plane, you know, there's no black box, but yet you're able to get a passport from the front of the plane. One of the passports was from the front of the plane that was found intact, and yet the black box was not intact, according to the official story. So they really said, you know, as far as, well, we don't have any information on that because it was so destroyed there was, you know, nothing we could do to recover any information from it. And another one was just missing as far as the black box goes. The black boxes are at the back of the plane, so how could it be so destroyed that you couldn't get information? And then also the other one that couldn't be found is very interesting. And yet you have a passport from a person seated towards the front of the plane that was totally intact that was found, you know, that flew down amongst the debris. So, you know, all these questions.
Yeah, supposedly two black boxes recovered from the towers, but they're supposedly too damaged to be able to get information off of them. And I'm mm-hmm. like, how is that possible? You know, it's just like, it none of it adds up at all. None of it.
Nope. I mean, even today, you would have thought that the government would have scrubbed the pictures of Shanksville. That's the one that bothers me the most as far as people believing that a plane actually went down there, you know, into the ground. I mean, all the events are tragic and all the events are speculative as far as how it happened and what happened. But that one just really is just a real thorn in my side because it's like, how can you look at the picture? They haven't even taken the pictures that down or even tried to modify them. They just showed the small hole with, you know, cans and paper and, you know, dirt or just junk trash, you know, not plain trash, but just trash. A couple of pieces, not even worthy of a trash
yeah,
bag.
Yeah, like there's never been a plane crash ever where the plane completely disintegrated into a crater. Like that's how they explain it. It hit with
air,
such
yep,
force that it just disintegrated into the crater. Right.
Yeah. not a stitch of nothing. No plane, no human bodies, no luggage, no nothing. Exactly. And then people are like, well, it happened. They made a memorial. Well, yeah, but that doesn't mean that what they said happened. I mean, anybody can put up a memorial and say, this is what happened. And so we're remembering. But look at the picture. I'm looking at it. And you really think that a plane went in there. Well, what else did? I don't know, but not a plane. It's just so frustrating. You have to get mad. Well, because I'm just so frustrated. Because look at the whole. Please. Look at the big plane, the wingspan, people, luggage. I mean, wow. Crazy.
Yeah. Like some debris found, it was like a mile or two away, you know, like really far away from the impact. And
mm-hmm.
it's like, well, how is there debris like a mile away unless it was shot down? And even Cheney admitted to giving the order to shoot it down. So,
mm-hmm.
but then, oh no, the passengers are heroes. You know, they brought the plane down themselves. We didn't
right.
shoot it down. No.
And there would have been a lot more debris because after that shot was fired at the speed it was going, other pieces of the plane would have started ripping apart. You know, they go, they're fast, these planes, the speed that they're at, and if they're shot or go down, you know, or are damaged in midair, you lose an engine or something, it blows, and then the planes just basically start to pull apart from there as far as, oh, one of our pieces fell off, so, oh, we're all starting to fall off now, you know, and it starts breaking apart because they're all connected, I guess, somehow, you know, through their rivets. But, yeah, it's just really weird that that's they find a piece or two, and they go, yep, see, here's the evidence. This is where the plane went down.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, you know, the more you look into the official, you know, you have to listen to the reports of, like, you know, right after these things were happening, because they're the most telling, because the story obviously changed as time went on, and the media scrubbed so much of it, you know, even to this day with World Trade Center 7, like I was, you know, saying at the start of the show, why is it in New York there's only two lights representing the two towers, you know, to memorialize the two towers? They don't have a third
right.
light for World Trade Center 7. Why not? You know, they'd so want to scrub anybody even looking into World Trade Center 7. They want people to be ignorant. There's still a lot of people that have no idea a third building went down. And they want it that way, because the second you start looking at World Trade Center 7, then that leads you to question everything else that happened that day, between the two towers coming down, the pancake effect, all this bullshit, you know, the Pentagon. It makes you question it all. And that's why. That's why there's, like, no acknowledgement of World Trade Center 7.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why it's too bad that you couldn't play that clip. Wow, I posted this link into the chat room under Bringing It Boy, and it's a long address there, but for listeners or whatever that's looking on or listening, if you don't know what we're talking about as far as Shanksville, you may be younger and just interested in learning and knowing, there's a link, and you can see what's been a part of the official story of where a plane had just went into the ground and what we're talking about.
Left the live broadcast too for me to try to get in as the host.
Yeah, Laurie, and all the light standards there in front of the place where something made an impact in the Pentagon is still standing, even immediately after, because in your pictures on your marquee, it shows the fire truck, so somebody's spraying water on the smoldering debris, so it couldn't have been too long after. In other words, maintenance crews couldn't have came out and replaced the lights if they had got knocked down. And even if they did get knocked down, the anchorage would have been tore up, so that wouldn't happen that immediately. So how in the heck is a plane flying that low? What did it do, retract its wings so it could squeeze through between the light spaces, light standard spaces, without knocking them down?
Yeah, and then on Facebook, I had posted this photo of another commercial airliner that had to land, like, on a freeway or something, and the light pole completely tore through the wing. So it's like, and that plane wasn't even supposedly going as fast as the one that supposedly hit the Pentagon, right? And so, you know, so that blows that theory right out the window as well. Like, if it really, you know, if it was really in that path, there was all these light poles and stuff, and the wings are not made that strongly, and the light pole would have just, like, cut right through the wing, which, if that happened, then there would be no more, you know, it'd be really hard to control the plane when, you know, it's been sliced through one of the wings, right? I mean, it's so mind-boggling to explain all this stuff, you know, and especially no building before or since has ever collapsed due to fires or even jet fuel or anything like that that explains, especially the uniform coming down of all three towers.
Right. exactly.
And then it's like, you know, and people like to question, like, you know, how could this be planned and nobody ever say anything? It wouldn't have been kept a secret. Well, it's like, it wasn't a secret. There were intelligence agencies in other countries that knew it was going to happen and were warning us it was going to happen. Hey, there's something being planned. They knew it, especially the Israeli Mossad. And there's a lot of compelling arguments to be made that Israeli Mossad was a part of it,
mm-hmm.
part of the planning and execution of it.
I have that clip, Lori, of Larry Silverstein, if you want me to try and play it.
Yeah, if it'll go over the airwaves.
Okay. Yeah, really. Okay.
World Trade Center 7 had always been considered the starting point for rebuilding, located north of the site.
That was just a sample. Did you hear that? Is that clear, or should I not play it?
Yeah, I think it sounds okay. What do you guys think?
7 had been cleared faster than the rest of the site, and there had been no bodies to recover. Debris in the North Tower collapsed. 7 burned until late afternoon, allowing occupants to evacuate to safety.
And then we're getting a call from the fire department commander telling me that they don't actually know they're going to be able to contain the fire. That's terrible loss of life. And this is pull. They made that decision to pull.
Okay, that was it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a direct admission. Like, yeah, pull it. There's already been so much loss of life. Just to be safe, go ahead and pull the whole fucking building. Right. The building that didn't get struck by a plane, you know, the building that wasn't excessively damaged or anything from the debris of the towers falling down. Just, you know, the office fires. We're only on like 2 floors, and they were progressing from like room to room to room because obviously, you know, it would burn up whatever was in one room and then start spreading to the next. And then, you know, so it wasn't like these fires were sustained for, you know, 4 or 5 hours or anything. It was
right.
Moving from room to room to room as you would expect because it was burning up. Everything that could be burned, you know, was burned and died out as it moved on to room where it had the burn. And it was only like 2 floors. I think it was like, what was it, like floors? Can't remember what floors they were. But all the other floors weren't on fire. So, and that building had been evacuated. And so... why would you decide to pull the building?
Well, here's the thing with his building. People say, I've heard him say, that the ground, the bedrock, because those piers, pilings that is, are driven into bedrock, and they're driven in so far, you know, so if the bedrock was damaged that caused the building to give way, the building would have sunk in the ground. It wouldn't have just disintegrated the way it done. You ever seen a bus driving down the street and all of a sudden it hit a sinkhole? It doesn't disintegrate. It just sinks on, goes right on down in the sinkhole. So if the bedrock was weakened, as people say, and that's generally... that doesn't make any damn sense. Then building number 7 would have just went down into the ground. I don't know how tall that building was, but it would have done the same thing as buildings done in Anchorage, Alaska, when they had that earthquake.
What's that screeching?
The third floor was at street level when that building sunk down into the ground.
Did I cut out?
Well, we still here.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah, I heard a bunch of screeching, and then it sounded like Pianki was cutting out, at least on my end. Oh, gotta love it. Great timing. And, you know, the wildfires around me were worse. You know, everything was worse yesterday. And today things are more contained and, you know, cooled down a little bit. Wind is changing direction. So for this to be happening, like the whole everything going down like it is right now, the timing couldn't be worse. It's been, what, over an hour now, I think, since all my internet and everything went down. I'm just teetering here with fluctuating between 2 and 3 bars of my so I think that's why I was hearing some feedback and then things were getting choppy.
Where are you located, Lori?
What?
Are you in California?
Oregon.
Oregon, okay.
And then my dog's barking, of course. And I see the doll drop. Yeah, it looks like doll dropped. Her connection isn't so great right now either. Apparently, looks like doll dropped. There's an 810 number.
There's a group organization that put themselves together called Architects for 9/11 Truth, and they had gathered, you know, a bunch of information and a bunch of scientists and researchers and demolition experts, and, you know, it's been going on for, gosh, I guess just after 9/11 to make sure, double check, triple check everything that they had learned, and because it just wasn't right, you know, as far as the things that happened that day with the structures, not saying any cover-up or anything else. They were just focused on the structures of the buildings and why they failed. And so with that information, they had gone before Congress to ask to have a hearing in order to begin an investigation because they were opposing the official story. And they had all this, you know, evidence and stuff to propose or to put forth, and they were denied. So there's nothing more other than their official report. But, years of work, people had donated their time and, you know, to help put this together.
And they're still working on it, actually. Richard Gage is the founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and he's been on my show twice as a guest, and he is now independent. But there is also the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Truth. And so these are still continuing to push for getting this, you know, getting a real investigation, a real independent investigation.
They started out with the 9/11 Commission was all full
of conflicts of interest. Each and every one of them, you know, had ample reason to skew the results and make the story, you know, make the evidence fit the story instead of, you know, the story fit the evidence kind of a thing. It was like reverse.
Mm-hmm. And you're right. You're absolutely right. And again, it started with the firefighters, and as far as they're wanting an investigation, but then the architects had popped up, and they kind of pulled together for, you know, as far as they're gathering information. But just the fact that you had firefighters who were on the ground in New York that were in the building, around the building, helping with that, with the buildings and everything else, speaking out, letting people, giving their testimony as far as what they heard, what they saw, everything else, and they didn't want to hear from them. Their voices were never heard in that report. They were excluded. Isn't that interesting? I mean, they're like, you know, there on the ground And it's, I just thought that was fascinating. How can you do that? How can you take that testimony and not include it in the report when it is very relevant, whatever they had, you know, what they had to input?
Yeah, they didn't allow anything
like
in there that you know,
yeah,
would question the story that they wanted to tell.
Yeah.
That's pretty much how
it's
that
not like
went.
Somebody from California says, I'm a firefighter in California, so I consider myself an expert. Let me give my input. No. These were New York firefighters that were on the ground that, you know, lost people that were there, you know, that died when the buildings went down. But they, you know, some of them heard explosions, you know, some of them saw things. There were just things that just weren't right as far as why they weren't able to get up to those floors and that would normally not be, happen, you know. So, yeah, that just sucks. That just sucks. So anybody who thinks, oh, our government is so great, they would never do anything like that to harm the people, you know? Why would they do that?
Never. Well, I don't know. Maybe trillions that were made, you know, like that's another point that I made up when I was on the show still, but in the incentive was like the very next day, the plan was to not just go into Afghanistan, but to go into Iraq, to go into Syria, to go into Libya. And this was the very next day. Like, it was already planned. It's like, that shit means takes planning. You don't just whip up a plan like that in 24 hours. It was ready to go.
Not to mention, they didn't have any congressional approval. They asked Congress to write up a resolution, but they knew that they would never get approval to start war, but they wanted a resolution saying that they just wanted permission to go after the people that, you know, had done this, the bad actors. And it's like, well, that's a pretty broad spectrum there as far as the people. You want to enter countries to, you know, go and find a needle in a haystack? I mean, you don't need to find the people because they supposedly died in these plane crashes, you know, like, duh.
That sounds like some Rumsfeld stuff to me.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely right. You just don't go barging off into another country, although they probably do. But where is the respect in this case?
It was political interest more than it was defending our country.
I was one of those slappies at the beginning, and I was okay with the Afghanistan thing, and then they said they had to go into Iraq. I'm like, no. That didn't have anything to do with this.
Where did we just leave our equipment?
In Afghanistan.
Yep.
Getting ready for the next 9/11.
I'm telling you, they got something to up there at the top working out and just trying to make it look like a show for us.
Yep, and they Colin Powell sold his soul, believing that, okay, I'm making this stuff up because you guys have got the right intelligence that really means that there's something there. And just wrong, all sorts of wrong. They were waiting for something like this. They may not have planned it, but they let the plan go through because that's what they wanted.
Yeah. And Rumsfeld admitting that there was only $2 trillion missing out of the Pentagon the day before, there are so many reasons that it was like their lucky fucking day when 9/11. They possibly want all of their dreams fucking come true, you know, bringing on Homeland Security, cameras freaking everywhere, the tracking of everybody, on the TV, you know, private sector, nationalizing that, you know, all the way down to. You can't have more than two roses in a bottle, you know.
Take your shoes off. We want to see your stinky ass feet.
Oh boy.
Is it just me or is Lorianne breaking up?
Lorianne is underwater.
She's down looking for the aliens.
Everything is falling apart for her.
Yeah, I think I'm on like now with my car. My phone's barely hanging on to my signal. I have a feeling that they're overloaded.
Wasn't it till next morning on the bed?
Yeah, I would bet.
Maybe you need to go bake 2 sweet potatoes, Laurie. Maybe that'll help.
Okay, what does that mean?
2 sweet potatoes and find a coat hanger or something as the conduit. See if I can boost the signal, make my sweet potato antenna.
No. Okay, you said sweet potato. Can't you do that with any potato?
All I need is some butter, and you'll be looking for another antenna.
Yeah. Nothing like the smell of baked sweet potatoes, man.
God, I'm telling you, man, that's some good stuff with a bunch of butter on it.
Mm-hmm.
And cinnamon, yeah, and cinnamon, butter and cinnamon, yum.
Butter, cinnamon, a little honey. Good gracious, you talking about something to make you smack your mama.
Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Connection completely dropped.
No, you're back again.
I'm back again? Okay. Yeah, so I've got about 9 minutes
in the queue
for anybody out there to call in. 563-999-3698. And if anybody calls, so now press 1. And then hopefully I can get you unmuted before the live broadcast ends.
Donnie called in. I'm supposed to have you put him back on. Put him on.
Yeah, I'll see him on. Was a little slow. People would have called in. Oh, and I hate to try to refresh it because it might not load up if I refresh. Let's see. I'm going to try it. Let's see if it'll load up. It doesn't look like it.
I think he turned his TV back on.
Yeah, because I'm not seeing anybody new on the switchboard at the moment. But it might be just taking a while before I see it. Because I couldn't load up the chat room either.
I
was there earlier, and the chat wasn't.
I guess I'm going to have to go log out.
Well, before you go,
you
know.
I was looking up that link.
The thing I was going to make mention, it was 9/11 that made it possible for the January 6th people to be locked up with the things that came after it. We have to realize what
the war on terror expanded to domestic terrorism. That's also part of the plan. That was the whole reason for bringing on more and more surveillance on our own people. And now they're twisting that around for domestic terrorists to treat them just the same as, you know, anybody else, and apply the same laws and everything to them.
I had a news article that I was going to bring up last night, but because you were going to do 9/11 today, I figured that would help, you know, the whole, what was the bill called something freedom. But it had the NDNA.
Freedom of information.
Oh, no. It was like the Freedom Act. That's how they got
the
to
Patriot
start
Act?
Spying on all of us.
The Patriot Act.
Okay, I'm glad you said that. I was thinking, before you even mentioned that, I started thinking about just the politics and all that. So what I did is I went and I just linked and I'm going to send it to Lori Ann so that anybody wants it, she can get it to you. But it's the Patriot Act. This is why I look at this stuff. I hear these Republicans out here telling us how bad this is, not good, and da-da-da-da-da. And the vote was 99-1 in the Senate. You know,
yeah.
I got congressmen and senators that was down here in Florida telling us, no, we don't need that. Well, how much did they pay you to change your mind? I don't know what he got out of it, but, man, I get tired of it.
I think some of them didn't, you know, just went ahead and signed it, didn't even look to see what all was in it.
Yeah.
But one of the things that they're doing now is called fog reveal. And what they do is they contact an outside company, and one of them is called Fog Data Science LLC. And what they do is they track your phone, and they make a picture of you by where your phone goes. So, like, you're in town and you want to go to a restaurant, it shows the restaurants that are around you. It shows that you go, like, Don and I went out to pick up his glasses, and my phone picked that up, and I looked it up. When I looked it up on the online to find the phone number to call him again to see if the glasses were in, it said, you've been here 2 days ago. I'm like, oh, my God. So they go ahead and collate all of the information. And so the police say, oh, hey, we want to check this one person or these few people, and we want to see what they're doing. And they can go without a warrant and go to this outside company and track people's phones to see how close they were to what was a crime or interacting with a certain individual. And it's totally
legal. It's in the chat room for anybody that wants it. I was saying the bill, the Patriot Act vote is in the chat room if anybody wants it.
I'm going to see if the chat room can stay open for me again.
You can put in our Facebook. Even though I'm in Facebook jail for another 27 days. Yay for me. Here I post a meme quoting one of the Nazi war criminals from the Nuremberg trials. That apparently is inciting violence or hate or something by quoting a Nazi war criminal at the Nuremberg trials. So I'm in the slammer on Facebook for another 27 days now. Are you guys there, or did I lose you?
Yeah.
Nope, I'm here.
Yeah.
Okay,
I haven't gotten blocked on Facebook yet, but something I do is I can go to a YouTube and somebody will be posting something there, and I'll just go and get the record and post it there. And then later, I can't get to that. They got me blocked. It's like, God knows. This is freedom of speech.
Yeah, you can definitely tell that they can't handle the truth.
Well, you know,
it's so ridiculous, though.
If you caught me in a lie in a debate, I would like, wait a minute, I just learned something. Why would I block you out of it to keep the debate going? That right there says it right there, you know. Somebody, we can't learn from somebody that disagrees with us. We just got to shut them down.
No, and you don't even have to be like, you know, if you're all vulgar about it, it's one thing, but to me too. It's like people just don't want you to, you know, post anything that blows up the propaganda that they've all signed on for, you know, and they just don't want to hear anything else. And it doesn't matter if you even present it respectfully.
It's like, hey, folks, the sun's coming up tomorrow morning. Block that guy. We don't want him in here telling people the truth.
I'm just able. I'm trying to unmute Donnie right now. He finally showed up. I'm trying to unmute him now.
Lori, off the subject, Lori. Remember I was telling you on that guy Bobby, the top 50 in the country? He corrected me as the top 40, and the reason he corrected me on that, he was telling me about his son had asked for one of his medals, and he told him, no, this is not something you give people. It's something you got to earn. And he goes, the one that he wanted whenever his son got killed in a motorcycle wreck, he buried it with him. I thought that was pretty.